to Spark Your Fire podcast. Content discussed on this podcast is general in nature. Please seek specific advice from qualified professionals. Now, let's start with the quote of the week.
There's no losing, only learning. There's no failure, only opportunities. And there's no problems, only solutions.
Great listeners, welcome back to the pod. It's been a while. One of my favorite people on the show, she's been missing. And that's Danny. Danny, welcome back.
Hey, Jazz. Happy New Year, and thank you for having me back. Although it seems a bit strange, doesn't it, saying Happy New Year in February, almost the end.
Happy New Year and Merry Christmas as well.
Exactly. And Kung Hui Fat Choi, but so all the Chinese listeners, I apologize. I'm not very good in Cantonese. Happy Chinese New Year as well.
I think we last caught up in October, what we were discussing just before the recording. And since then, there's been a few things that have been happening in the market. The last time we did catch up, chat was around the reflation trade and all that stuff. Where should we get started from, Danny, with 2021? What's happening in the market? Reflation trade? I mean, you're the best person, so I'll let you kick into gear and then keep asking the questions, I guess.
Okay. I guess the biggest thing is that we now have the vaccine rollouts across the globe, and this is very much leading into both the sentiment and expectations in stock markets, mm-hmm. That we are going to have a very robust recovery in economic growth. It's not only in Australia, but also in the United States. Mm-hmm. And you're moving from, I suppose, lockdown economies to the reopening trade, and that's generally the term that is given to it. Mm-hmm. And there are expectations, for example, that you're going to see the strongest GDP growth in America since World War II, mm-hmm. bearing in mind that you're coming off a very, very low base. Mm-hmm. And how this is manifesting itself in the stock markets is largely through what's happening with inflation expectations and interest rates, particularly the 10-year US Treasury note. And because investors are basically saying, we are now very positive about economic growth, we're hoping that with the vaccine rollout, life will go back to normal. So we'll be able to travel again, we'll start going out to restaurants, life will be more normal as we knew it. Of course, you know, it depends. In parts of Australia, I mean, poor Melbourne has had terrible problems with the lockdowns, mm-hmm. whereas in Sydney, our lives have pretty much not been that impacted. But when you look at countries like the UK, which has had severe lockdowns, and even if lockdowns weren't enforced in parts across America, people generally didn't want to go out because they were too scared of catching the virus. Mm-hmm. So what we're looking at in terms of these inflationary expectations with the uptick in economic activity, and a very strong one to say the least, I think some of the expectations year on year could be as high as 8% GDP growth in the first quarter. Mm-hmm. And that's because you're coming off a heavily contracted fall in the first quarter of 2020. Mm-hmm. But what you're seeing is that people are saying, well, if we're going to have this economic recovery, we're also going to see a pickup in inflation. Mm-hmm. Whether or not that actually, there's starting to be signs in the US that you are seeing a pickup, particularly in the likes of the producer manufacturing index, because a lot of stock had actually been drawn down over the course of 2020. And now as the consumer comes back to the market, you're seeing a big pickup in manufacturing activity. In fact, you've probably seen that there's a global shortage in semiconductors, mm-hmm. Which has been impacting on some of the car manufacturing companies. What has happened in the interest rate market is the 10-year Treasury, in response to the expected pickup in demand and possibly inflation, you've seen it move from around a low of less than 0.6% in July 2020 at its low. It was up around 0.9% in January this year, and we're currently sitting at about 1.369%. So the rate of increase, which is being mirrored in Australia, I was just having a look at the Australian 10-year Treasury, and that has also moved very, very sharply over the course of the last month. I'll just have to check. I think it's up to about 1.5, 1.6% at the moment. Oh, actually, it's 1.65%, and that was probably at about 1.1, 1.2 at the start of the year. So what this does to equity markets is that it causes a rotation out of all those growth companies that did incredibly well over the course of 2020, all those disruptive growth companies that could actually see through the economic downturn and actually benefited from it. The money is now moving out of those expensive names and going into what you call value stocks, cheaper stocks. And typically those stocks are the cyclical companies that you see in the finance sector, that you see in the energy sector with oil and gas, and also in the likes of the iron ore players here in Australia, because we have record iron ore prices as well. Now, the oil price has moved up from lows of around $30 a barrel. It's through $60 a barrel. That has been supported in part by the huge storms that you've had over in the United States, in Texas, which obviously means a lot of production has been knocked out. And I read that Goldman's is expecting that the oil price will continue to rise through to $70. Mm-hmm. Now, with the commodities moving up so strongly, copper prices at a 9-year high. So all the markets are basically saying we are looking at strong an uptick in a cycle, and such a strong uptick that we haven't seen it for many, many years, because really GDP growth in the US and Australia had really been starting to become a bit sluggish prior to COVID. So now you've had all this economic stimulus, you've had all the stimulus from the central banks, and that's why it's so robust. What happens is the 10-year Treasury goes up, as interest rates, as the yield curve moves up at the long end, it's creating this concern that it's moving too quickly. So if you look at interest rates in a historical context, they're still incredibly low. So even if the US 10-year Treasury, you know, it's currently under 1.4, even if it goes to 2%, which is probably at the high end of expectations for the end of 2021, that in historical context is still incredibly low. And something that I wrote in my blog post yesterday, because I've been looking at this for my upcoming book on the US market, is that one of the biggest bull runs in US shares was in the 1990s. And you actually had the 10-year bonds as high as 8% and then falling to 5%. So, of course, the trajectory was from high to low rather than low to high. But there is a sweet spot for interest rates, which is great for not only the reflation trade, the cyclical stocks, but also technology stocks, but probably at lower valuations. So why don't I take a breather there, because I'm sure you have some questions.
I've been writing them down. So you already mentioned about the cyclical companies that will be the trend that we'll see, right? There's a lot of talk about the with the reflation trade, the commodities being the that it will outperform over the next 2 to 3 years, especially likes of gold and silver with the amount of freshly minted money into the system. So based on your analysis for 2021 and maybe even longer up to for the next 2 to 3 years, where do you, which particular markets do you see outperforming?
Okay, so if we look at Australia, I think it's worth focusing on what we sort of term is the blue chip companies, the traditional companies that have made up the bulk of the ASX 200, which is the banking stocks and the material stocks. So we're talking the likes of BHP, Rio, Fortescue, the major banks here in Australia. They all struggled terribly up until the turnaround that we've seen recently, okay? Mm-hmm. So from 2015 onwards, really the banks couldn't catch a trick. You had pressure on dividends occurring. In fact, some of them had to cut their dividends last year. And investors had been very used to receiving a fully franked dividend yield on those banking stocks of in excess of 4%. Mm-hmm. So they went from having high dividends in 2015. The banks, because their businesses and their margins had been under pressure, mm-hmm. Weren't able to deliver the historical returns. Mm-hmm. What the whole pandemic has done has created a reset for these businesses so that you actually now are getting a washing out in terms of the provisioning for the loan losses that they were expecting last year. You're seeing an uptick in housing activity here in Australia, and the banks are very, very exposed to that. Mm-hmm. You're seeing the yield curve moving in the right direction, i.e. long-end bonds are going up, which is positive for the banks and their lending books. Mm-hmm. And you're actually seeing huge results coming out of those companies. Now, my view, there's certainly a lot of bullish bets on housing here in Australia, which is slightly ironic because you are in a situation where immigration is actually not taking place. Mm-hmm. But there still seems to be incredible pent-up demand from first home own buyers. So if they can afford to get onto the housing cycle, they are going to do that. So most commentators, and myself included, are very positive or think that you're going to have probably a strong performance out of the Australian banks over the next 12 to 18 months, irrespective of what might be the bigger picture, the bigger secular picture of all the digital disruption mm-hmm. that is going on mm-hmm. In the finance sector overseas with things like whether it's your digital currencies, whether it's your digital wallets, whether it's different payment systems and the like. Mm-hmm. There is also... I think the expectation that you're going to continue to see, so you've got big, huge dividends coming out of those companies, you've got big dividends coming out of the big miners, and if the iron ore price holds up, which some analysts are starting to think may occur, those dividends will continue to remain very strong over the course of the next 12 months. Certainly commodities like copper, lithium plays, rare earths are potentially also in a big super cycle, and that's largely to do with the fact that the Biden administration has announced that they're very keen to pursue net zero emissions by 2050. So you're going to see ongoing huge investment, I believe, in the clean energy space mm-hmm. and also in the transition to the electric vehicle production. That will underwrite a lot of these metals and minerals that go into those vehicles. Mm-hmm. There is also just a general cyclical uptick in consumer demand. There's some question mark as JobKeeper tails off a little bit, but you will have seen that in terms of the job seeker payment, they've just increased it today permanently, it would seem. But people have basically been saving their money over the last 12 months because they haven't been able to travel. So all that money is looking to either go into continuing to buy into the housing sector or upgrading their housing, or when we get more free travel, I think you're going to see a lot of money moving back into those travel and leisure type stocks as well.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting you mentioned banking stocks and then touched on the digital currencies, because that was going to be one of my questions with the disruption that's going on in the fintech space and on top of that digital currencies. Do we still see banking stocks to be performing overall when you see that much disruption, or that's just more of a with the housing boom, which you talked about, and there's definitely going to be housing growth. And we've discussed that on the podcast as well, that somewhere between over the next 3 years, more towards the north of 30%. We are a little bit more bullish because we discuss property a lot on this podcast. Just purely based on the housing demand, the banking stocks will end up doing well when you see that much disruption in that space. I mean, that can be challenged, isn't it? when you look at what's going on?
Well, I think you have to differentiate, and this is where it's quite an interesting period for investing, because I'm really bullish on the 10-year period, and I particularly like the big secular themes, and sometimes they're easier to capture over in the US market. You have to use like ETF products here in Australia to get exposure, because we don't have a lot of companies that can give you the same exposure. But the funny thing is, Jazz, that, you know, it's a bit like the oil market, right? So one would say, well, with all this transition to electric vehicles, which is taking place, and it mightn't be as obvious here in Australia, but it's certainly happening overseas, because you've got countries like the UK and France and Germany that are going to ban all combustion engines by 2030. So what happens is demand shifts towards EVs and demand shifts away from oil, you actually get a situation where, ironically, the oil price will go up, okay, because production is taken off stream, okay? So you get the winners in the oil market, because we're not going to go off oil overnight, but we may have passed through peak oil. And because we've passed through peak oil, it means the low-cost producers are going to do incredibly well, assuming OPEC doesn't flood, you know, start to flood the market. And the high-cost producers move off stream. So it's a kind of weird scenario that as this transition takes place, you can actually get bubbles and upticks in economies that are probably need to either transition or are on decline. And arguably, you could say the same about the banks in Australia. Like, the banks aren't going to disappear overnight. They're far too strong. You know, there's huge exposure to housing. But I remain of the view that they do have to be careful about disruption. So recently, my partner and I needed to get a mortgage. And because of our age and our businesses, we didn't fit into the classic category of getting a mortgage from the likes of Commonwealth Bank and National Australia Bank. We could have got one, but we couldn't have got the amount that we wanted. So we ended up borrowing from Liberty Financial and found that the whole experience was just absolutely brilliant. And here is a classic case in point of a company that's now listed on the ASX, and it'll be really interesting to see how their results are. I mean, I have to put my hand up, I own the shares. And you, not only was the experience fabulous, but the fact that they could actually look at different types of borrowers and say, it's okay, we can assess your risk and lend you money, to me would seem that there is huge scope for, I suppose, innovative competitors to challenge the long-term market share of our banks. However, from an investing standpoint, you need to take the position, are you buying for 3, 6 months, 12 months down the track, or are you taking a longer-term view? And, of course, if you're taking a longer-term view, you'd have to seriously question, do you have exposure or an overweight position into the traditional banks here in Australia? And my response would probably be no. You can look at interesting situations. I just bought some Bank of Queensland today, and I'm not saying everybody else go out and buy it, but I thought it's quite interesting, the proposition that's going on there with the CEO in terms of taking over ME, and I need to do more research on it. But to me, it was making all the right sounds about how they were going to change the business model of this kind of clunky old style business that they have. So whether it's gaining exposure in certain commodities or the energy sector like oil, you always, or the banks, you always want to pick the best company in that sector if you're going to gain exposure, because they're the ones that will probably be able to ride out the longer term business cycle. While some of the other ones basically, you know, struggle with their businesses as they are disrupted. And I don't see those themes disappearing anytime soon, because there's massive, massive change still happening in spite of this short-term reflation trade. Does that make sense?
No, definitely. You're right. The banks aren't going anywhere anytime soon. It's just when you look at the returns, if you were to invest your or park your money in banks, and it's obviously much safer, but then you compare it to some of these fintech technologies, digital currencies is fairly volatile and it's much more riskier. So I think it comes down to the investor's appetite of what kind of risk appetite the investor has. But yeah, completely agree that banking stocks aren't going anywhere. One thing I did want to ask was with the yield curve moving upwards, there has been a lot of bullish calls that have been made over the last year or so on commodities like gold and silver. Now, looking at the yield curve, gold obviously normally goes into in the opposite direction. What are your thoughts in that space?
Oh, Jazz, to tell you the truth, I don't really have a point of view on gold. It kind of doesn't figure in my playbook at this point in time. Mm-hmm. I think that, you know, you're absolutely right. If Treasury, 10-year Treasury is going to continue to go higher, then theoretically the gold price is going to continue to weaken. Mm-hmm. There's obviously a massive debate going on around the world with different senior authorities and experts having different views on whether or not digital currencies or cryptocurrencies rather than digital currencies. Cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin are going to replace gold. I think, you know, the jury is out on that one. But personally, I don't see any real reason at the moment why you have to really have a position so much in gold, because although there's a resetting of valuations going on now between the technological growth companies and the value cyclical companies, I think there's going to be a lot of money to be made in equities over the next few years. So I don't think people want to get overly bearish at this point in time, even if the market, and I wrote about this in an article, has a bit of a sell down, and only because the 10-year is moving too quickly at this point in time. It's really a 5 to 10% pullback in equities. And in fact, you've seen some of the technology stocks. I was having a look at Xero today, and Xero is off, you know, almost 30% from its high. You could argue that Xero was way too high at $160, but now that it's sub $120, it's starting to look a bit interesting. Mm-hmm. So I think it's really important for your listeners and for investors to understand that you've just got so much going on under the index that belies what the actual index is doing. So my portfolios, which have had quite a heavy growth slant, and even though I took some profits on some certain stocks, there is scope as the general yield picks up for the valuations to continue to come under pressure. Doesn't mean those companies aren't going to produce growth earnings, are not going to grow. It's just the valuations became a bit stressed, and that's why the money is going into the cheaper ones. But I really can't say with my hand on my heart that I'd be piling into any sort of gold assets at this point in time, unless you're looking for a copper play, and obviously you get copper plays often when they're gold miners.
Any general thoughts on emerging markets? How would you look at that play?
Yeah, a lot of people are still bullish on emerging markets, although I think there's some money coming out of China at the moment, just in terms of ETF flows out of the US, out of the Chinese stocks, and probably because they've run terribly hard and they're just kind of perceived as being high growth stocks and a high value trade, like some of the other NASDAQ stocks. Mm-hmm. Look, at the end of the day, emerging markets potentially has, you know, a position in your portfolio. Do you need to go there? I don't know. There's so much to choose from at the moment. I think the greatest challenge for investors is when you start looking at, not only do you have so many different stocks to play out in Australia, but you've now got all these thematic ETFs coming into the market, as well as country ETFs, as well as sector ETFs. So I think it's quite hard to choose. Would you choose emerging markets over anything else? Typically, it's a US dollar play. So if you're bearish on the US dollar and you think it's going to continue to weaken, then emerging markets should, by definition, do quite well under that proposition. And of course, there is the long-term demographic story of emerging markets moving up in terms of, you know, their income and their GDP growth. But as someone who used to do emerging markets in the 90s during the boom times, they've been emerging for a very long time.
I like that. Your favorite pick for 2021, and this is not a financial advice, but Danny's favorite pick for 2021 in the stock market, ASX.
Well, that's a horrible question to ask me. My gosh.
Why is that a horrible question?
Oh, gee, because that's not really how a portfolio works at the end of the day. I'm not going
you're
to give
one. You're only allowed to pick one.
I'm only allowed to pick one. Gee, I'm going to have a think about that one. Only one. Gosh. Oh, dear, I mean, let me look, put it this way. I would, yeah, for just taking such a short-term view, that's a really tricky one because you could get, you know, Woodside, which has been an absolute dog for years. If the oil price spikes, oil and gas price spike on the upside and they get their acted together, you know, you could get a scenario where something like Woodside does incredibly well. Alternatively, mm-hmm. Australia's biggest biotech, CSL, is really, really getting sold off. It's down to around $260. Now, if you get a strong reopening trade, as in the vaccines work and people, so for CSL, their blood plasma, they're really struggling with their biggest business because people are not donating blood in the US and they need plasma to make their products. So you could argue that with a reopening trade, CSL, if there's signs that people are going back to the donation centres and they're being paid, you could see a huge re-rating in that share price. I you know, it's too tricky. The money is swinging around so much between reflation, value, reopening, and then it's kind of zooms back in and says, oh, well, if, you know, the Fed is saying inflation's not coming anytime soon, then you could see and you get some weak economic statistics, or if you get a third phase of COVID breaking out with these new strains, then you could actually zoom back in, literally, excuse the pun, into the technology shares. So I think kind of one pick is really not the way to look at it. I think people need to look at diversifying their portfolios across good quality companies in both sort of sectors of the market or segments of the market, quality technology because they're not going away anytime soon, and quality potentially reflation reopening trades. So I dodged that question.
any general thoughts on the tech sector? I mean, over the last few years, it's done exceptionally well. And when you look at some of the PE ratios, likes of Tesla, Apple, Zoom is another example, which we discussed last time, I think it was. Do you see them to keep outperforming over the next few years? Or do you think it will be there will be a rotation there?
I'd definitely be buying Tesla into this pullback. I still think that there is huge upside potential in that company for many reasons. I think they'll probably surprise on the upside in terms of the amount of cars produced and sold this year. There's the potential to go to 1 million vehicles this year, which would be a doubling over 2020. And clearly it will depend on the expansion that they're getting out of Shanghai. But the long-term story in Tesla, I believe, is in place. So if you continue to see profit taking in that, I'd be buying. Apple, I still think there's the whole restocking, the new super cycle in iPhones through 5G, the rollout of 5G. So again, on pullback, it's more expensive than it's traditionally been, but it's not valued up there such as some of the more expensive software as a service or data analytics companies like that in the USA. So if your listeners are looking for a ETF with exposure to the US NASDAQ, you can look at something like QQQ. It does have a heavy weighting to the big tech stocks, but if they continue to be dragged down, that's probably a good way to capture capture that market. Mm-hmm. Here in Australia, I keep your eye on Xero because I think it's the closer that gets towards sub $110, the more interesting it is. Mm-hmm. The likes of Appen that's going to announce this week, it's almost halved. Mm-hmm. There's some question marks about whether or not it's losing market share in terms of its analytics and machine learning capabilities. It's got a number of major customers like Amazon. Mm-hmm. And although they've downgraded their earnings, it's not like their earnings have collapsed. So that is one that possibly investors can put their eye on. Mm-hmm. It did get as low as, I think, about $15 in the March sell-off last year. I think it's around $20 at the moment. Mm-hmm. And there's also, you could look at possibly the data analytics company Nuix, which listed last year, which was a big, big popular company, which is going nowhere at the moment. So I think it's very much stock specific. Cybersecurity stocks over in the US, I still think have great, great long growth runways and not going anywhere. I was looking at Palo Alto today. I don't have a position in that. That's one of the majors that's looking at covering all sections of cybersecurity, from cloud-based products to on-premise products to helping at the development stage of the software, because now they're trying to embed more cybersecurity measures in as the actual software is being developed, and they've got a hybrid model between cloud and physical on-presence. So that's one I would also have a look at should that pull back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's cybersecurity is a very interesting one these days. Well, I totally agree on that. Danny? It was awesome. Been a while, like we said before. it's great. I love your knowledge in this space, and listeners enjoy it, so which is good. Anything else that you would like to leave listeners with before we start wrapping this up?
Well, if listeners are interested, I'd have the free monthly blog post, so you can go to shareplicity.com.au and just have a look, because I summarise my thoughts on where I see the Australian markets. Mm-hmm. And hopefully by the end of July, there'll be a new book on the US stock markets, which will give investors an idea of how to invest over there, either from Australia or directly into the US. But I'm really bullish on the next 10 years. I think there's going to be incredible challenges, mm-hmm. Like we saw last year. But I think there are huge opportunities as well, and the really good companies are going to take those challenges head on, mm-hmm. adapt a change, and I think you're going to see some seismic shifts going on. And the one thing that I think when investors, if they can look outside of Australia, because while we do some things here really, really well, sometimes it's a bit disappointing to see our politics almost paralysing Australia when we could be doing so much more in other arenas that you're getting overseas. And I think investors just need to have a really open mind, because there are so many big secular themes that are not going away, that I think you would probably, having your tech slant, Jazz, and your interest in Bitcoin and all of those things, you'd know exactly what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. And it transcends across whether it's decarbonisation, whether it's fintechs, whether it's, you know, digital currencies. I mean, you only have to speak to a 20-year-old to see their view of the world is very different to most people in their 50s and 60s, et cetera. Like, okay, that's a sweeping generalisation, but they just have a completely different perspective on life. So I think there's going to be some big money to be made over the next 10 years.
I completely agree with you. There's so much happening in the world of finance, real estate, and otherwise. Like we discussed, I had... I've been doing rounds of real estate, different states, with the experts within their territories, and we are extremely bullish on some of the stuff. Crypto market has already, I think, performed pretty well this year, late last year kind of thing. And stock market we've just discussed, real estate without a doubt. So I'm with you, extremely bullish on that one. Agree, totally agree.
Have you had a look at Zillow, what they're up to? And
not lately. At one point, I had my eye on it, but not lately.
It's quite interesting because they're now starting to, from what I can see, completely, it's called iBuying. So they're really trying to disrupt the whole real estate market over in the US, particularly at the low end of the market. So buyers will literally be able to go onto their website. They will be offering lower costs, so it's at the lower end of the market, which is much easier in the US because housing is much, much cheaper there than it is in Australia, the absolute amounts that you fork out. And you will be able to literally, you know, buy online, order all the renovations online, do the whole thing. So they're really trying to squeeze out all those middlemen and everybody that takes a clip along the way. So it's quite an interesting model. I mean, it rallied really hard. It's obviously got sold off last night. But, yeah, it's just another case of where there is disruption coming to traditional industries.
The key word is the disruption. Where there's disruption, there will be opportunity to make a lot of money. So it's just keeping your eye out and looking for the right ones out there. But something we'll maybe touch on next time we have you on the show, because that will take quite a long time. And to the listeners, none of this is financial advice. Speak to your financial advisors and play safe, stay safe. We'll see you guys next time. Cheers.